That's good. You're sure that fellow wasn't acting strange, then? Nothing odd?
The serving woman shook her head, sitting with her arms wrapped around herself. They'd finally managed to get down from the top floor, following the panicked exodus by the rich types. The governor was surrounded by a bubble of guards over to Wayne's left, and a set of strong electric lanterns illuminated the misty night. The green in front of the skyscraper felt right empty now that so many people had left. He figured that would soon change when Marcy returned with some more constables. She'd run off to fetch them and give a report. That meant Wayne was the sole officer of law-keeping in the vicinity. A frightening thought.
I've got one more question for you.
Yes, officer?
Where'd you get those shoes?
My shoes?
Yeah, your shoes. Look plenty comfortable, they do. You can never have too many pairs of black pumps. They go with rust and everything.
You're a man.
Sure I am. Checked last time I pissed. The shoes?
Rousseau's, 3rd Octant, on Yeoman Street. They were on sale last week.
Damn, that's beautiful. Thanks. You're free to go.
She gave him that look that people seemed to give only to Wayne, the one he hadn't quite figured. Ah, well. He wrote down the name of the shop. If he had to wear those awful pumps from his disguise box one more time, he'd probably go insane. He popped a ball of gum into his mouth and wandered over toward the pile of guards, going over his notes.
That server up above was not the Condra.
Wayne had talked to a dozen of the staff. All knew the fellow and said he hadn't been acting strange at all, but none of them liked him. He was a screw-up, and none were surprised that he turned out to be rotten. An amateur might think that picking the new guy made for a good disguise, but this bleeder, she could be anyone. Why would she pick the low man on the list? Someone who had only joined the staff a few weeks back. Sure, being new would give you an excuse to not know people's names, but by reports, this fellow hadn't forgotten anyone's name tonight. And picking the habitual klutz with a bad reputation would just lead to everyone watching over your shoulder. A terrible choice for an imitator. That guy had been some other kind of mole. He shook his head.
Where's Drim? I want to show him what I've got.
The guard leaned over, looking at Wayne's notepad.
All that's on there is a bunch of scribbles.
It's for show. Makes people talk more if they think you're writing stuff down. Don't know why. I sure wouldn't want anyone remembering the slag I say.
Wayne hesitated, then shoved aside the guard, looking into the middle of the pile. Drim wasn't there, and neither was the governor.
What'd you do with him?
Wayne turned to the others.
It was best everyone thought he was still here. In truth, he and Drim headed to a secure location ages ago. If we fooled you, then hopefully we fooled the assassin.
Fooled? I'm supposed to be protecting the guy.
Well, you're doing a rusting good job of that, mate, ain't you?
Wayne decided to do the only reasonable thing at this moment. He decked the fellow. Wax rarely appreciated the city as much as he did when he needed to get somewhere quickly. To the eyes of a man burning steel, Ellendale was alight and full of motion, even while shadowed by darkness and mist. Metal. In some ways, that was the true mark of mankind. Man tamed the stones, the bones of the earth below. Man tamed the fire, that ephemeral, consuming soul of life. And combining the two, he drew forth the marrow of the rocks themselves, then made molten tools. Wax passed among the skyscrapers like a whisper, the motion drying his clothing. He became just another current in the mists, and moving with him in radial spokes was a majestic network of blue lines, like a million outstretched fingers pointing the way to anchors he could use along his path. When even a galloping horse was too slow, Wax had steel. It burned in him, returning to the fire that gave it shape. From it he drew power. Sometimes that wasn't enough. But this night, he exploded through the lit upper windows of the Harms dwelling, rolling and coming up with guns leveled. Lord Harms swiveled in the chair of his writing desk. Upon seeing Wax, the red-faced older man scrambled to reach into his desk drawer. Wax scanned the room. Nobody else there. No enemies in the corners, no moving bits of metal in closets or the bedroom. He'd arrived in time. Wax stood up as Lord Harms whipped out a pistol, one of the modern semi-autos that were popular with the constables. Harms leaped to his feet and rushed over to Wax, holding his gun in two hands.
Where are they? We can take them. Hey, old boy.
You have a gun.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. After what happened last year, I realized that a man has to be armed. What's the emergency? I'll have your back.
Wax carefully tipped the point of Lord Harms' gun downward, just in case a bullet was chambered. Because fortunately, the man hadn't locked a magazine into the pistol. Wax glanced behind at the windows. He'd flung them open with a push as he approached, but they were meant to open outward, not inward. He'd ripped both right off their hinges, toppling one while the other hung by its corner. Mist poured in through the opening, flooding the floor. Where was Bleeder? In the house somewhere? Impersonating a maid? A neighbor? A constable passing on the street? Standing in the room with him?
Jaxton, do you remember when you first met me and Wayne was pretending to be my butler?
You mean your uncle?
Good.
An imposter wouldn't know that, would she? Rusts. He'd have to suspect everyone.
You're in danger.
Wax slid his guns into their hip holsters. His suit was basically ruined from the swim in the canal, and he'd tossed aside his cravat, but the sturdy mist coat had seen far worse than this.
I'm getting you out of here.
But my daughter!
Steris is fine. Wayne is watching her. Let's go.
The problem was, go where? Wax had 100 places he could take Harms, but Bleeder could be lurking at any of them. The odds were certainly in Wax's favor, and yet...
Bleeder is ancient. Older than the destruction of the world, she is crafty, careful, and brilliant. She spent centuries studying human behavior.
Any option Wax chose could be the very one Bleeder had predicted he would choose. How did you outthink something so old, so knowledgeable? The solution seemed easy. You didn't try. Steris left Zobel Tower to find Wayne sitting across the street from a huddle of bruised and obviously angry men. Wayne was eating a sandwich.
Oh, Wayne.
She looked at the hostile, wounded men and back to him.
Those are the governor's guards. He's going to need them tonight.
It's not my fault. I was being unaccommodating.
Steris settled down beside him and looked up through the mists toward the tower. She could make out the lights on various floors, glowing like phantoms above, leading all the way up to the very top.
This is how it's going to be with him, isn't it? Always being left behind in the middle of something? Always half feeling as if I'm part of his life?
You could do the noble thing, Steris. Give up on the whole marriage. Let him loose to find someone he actually likes.
And my family's investment in him and his house?
Well, I know this here is revolutionary words, Steris, but you can't loan a chap money without him having to jump you in appreciation, if you know my meaning.
Did he say where he was going?
Nah, he's chasing Bleeder down. Means he could have gone anywhere, and so trying to find him is useless. He'll come back for me when he can. If I leave, I'll just end up missing him.
I see.
Steris settled back, crossing her feet on the curb and staring up at those lights.
Do you hate me because of what I represent, Wayne? The responsibilities that called him back?
I don't hate you. I find you repulsive. That there is an important distinction, it is.
But...
Wayne stood up. He shoved the rest of the sandwich into his mouth. Then he walked over to the guards that were glaring at him and sat down. The implication was obvious. I'd rather be here. Steris closed her eyes, squeezing them shut, and tried to pretend she was someone other than herself for a time. Eventually, the constable carriages arrived. She stood up and composed herself, relieved when Marcy exited one of them and hurried over.
Get in.
Marcy pointed to one of the carriages.
I'm sending you someplace safe.
I think the danger has passed here, unless Wayne is picking fights again.
No, the danger has only just started.
Something's happened, hasn't it?
Wayne, get over here. We've got work to do.
Wax stashed Lord Harms at the very top of Fetter Tower. He'd chosen its location on the city map by picking random numbers. Hopefully Bleeder wouldn't be able to outthink a plan with no thought involved. Harms had instructions to lie low, hide in the darkness, and stay quiet. Even if Bleeder could steel push and search in the night, the chance of her happening upon Harms was ridiculously low, verging on impossible. That didn't stop Wax from worrying. Steris's father was a silly man, but good-natured and amiable. It was the best Wax could do, as he needed to locate the governor. That hunt took Wax longer than he'd have assumed, which was actually a good thing. It meant that Drim, despite his dislike of Wax, was doing his job properly. Best Wax could determine, they had sent at least 3 unmarked carriages away from Zobel Tower. 2 decoys and 1 with the governor inside. He spotted one on Stanton Way and dismissed it. Too obvious, with the guards riding on top. Guessing that another had gone east, he found it driving around in a circle in the third octant, also trying to draw attention. It was moving too slowly. Besides, the governor wouldn't go that way. Innate was a fighter. He wouldn't want to be seen hiding. So it was that Wax found himself perched on the top of a building near Hammond Promenade, a few streets from Innate's own mansion. He'd return here, eschewing safe houses in the city. He'd want to be in his center of power and authority. The mists seemed to glow here in the city, lit by a thousand lights, an increasing number of them electric. It took long enough for the carriage to arrive that Wax was starting to second-guess himself. But arrive it did. A tall, topped, enclosed coach with red curtains. Yes, it was quite nondescript. The horses, however, were from the governor's prized breeding stock, just like the two decoys. Wax shook his head as he jumped and pushed his way to the top of the stone archway outside the First Insurance Bank. The coach moved at a fair clip and held no obvious guards. They must have taken a very roundabout way to take so long to reach here. Wax pushed on a streetlight, hurling himself after the governor's coach. He landed on its top and nodded to the surprised coachman, then swung down alongside the vehicle, hanging by one arm above the blur of cobblestones beneath. After a few moments, the window shade opened, revealing Drim's surprised face.
Ladrian, what the hell are you doing?
Being polite. May I come in?
What if I refuse?
Then I stop being polite.
Drim sneered but glanced to the side, where the governor rode with his hat in his lap. The man nodded and turned back to the door. As Drim opened the door, Wax grabbed the edge of the roof and swung into the vehicle. Wax took the seat opposite Drim and the governor. Drim would be a perfect person to imitate, as would the carriage driver, as would basically anyone with access to the governor, including his wife and family.
Lord Ladrian, breaking up the party wasn't enough for you. You have to harass me on the way home from it as well.
Wax shrugged, then moved to climb back out of the carriage.
What are you doing now, you fool?
Leaving? There are thousands of places I could be right now, most of them more pleasant.
He hesitated, then pulled out one of his Sterions and flipped it in his hand, holding it grip first to the governor.
Here.
Why would I need a gun? I have bodyguards.
So did your brother. Take it. I'll feel guilty when you get shot if I haven't done something.
Shot? My brother was killed because of his flirtations with the underbelly of Ellendale. They wouldn't dare touch me.
I'm sure they wouldn't.
Wax leaned out the door, hesitated, then looked back in.
You know how to spot a Chondra, right, Drim?
A what?
Those are myths.
Are they? Then the one I met tonight must have been lying. Not sure how she made her skin transparent, though. Oh, well, guess you have it in hand.
You mean to tell me that one of the faceless immortals was at my party tonight?
Two, actually. One came to help. I would introduce you, have her prove her nature to you, but it does seem to me that your mind is made up. The other one at the party was the person who killed your brother. You sure you don't want a gun? No? All right,
I'll just made your point, Lord Waxillium.
My lord, this is stupid. The faceless immortals? Every second person claims to have met one just to get their stones in the broadsheets. You're not really considering these claims, are you?
Innate studied Wax.
He is, because he knows something strange happened to his brother. Killed in his safe room, guards murdered from behind by someone they trusted, and Winston Innate took his security very seriously. More seriously than you do, I suspect, Mr. Governor.
You can introduce me to one of the creatures? Offer me proof of their existence?
Yes.
But why would one of Harmony's own servants kill Lord Winsting?
The Chondra has gone insane. We don't know her motives yet, but she does seem to want you dead, Mr. Governor. So my job is to keep you alive.
What do we do? How do we prepare?
Well, first I take over your security.
Like hell you do.
Your taking over is impossible. Drim has served me well for years. Where are you going?
There's a play I wanted to see tonight. Figure I'd go catch the tail end while you two discuss this.
And if this creature comes for me while you're gone?
I'm sure your head of security can deal with it. He knew the Chondra were at the party tonight, didn't he? And he almost certainly didn't miss Wayne slipping in wearing a disguise.
You may review my security protocols and offer advice.
Fine.
Wax pulled the door closed as the carriage turned a corner and approached the governor's mansion.
But you have to agree to one thing right now. I'm going to give you both a passphrase, and I want you both to vow not to share it with anyone, not even each other or Lady Innate. You'll also give me a passphrase. When we meet, we'll exchange them in a whisper, which will prove that none of us have been replaced.
You honestly think I wouldn't know my own wife?
I'm sure you would. But this is a requirement of my aid, and you must humor me. It will put my mind at ease.
The family was most dangerous. Bleeder had sounded so confident, as if she had the governor in hand, which made Wax think the creature had already gotten to one of the family. Lady Innate hadn't been at the party, but Harmony had said Bleeder could swap bodies whenever she wished. Rust and ruin, what an awful spot to be in. Bleeder could have killed a niece or nephew, a toddler even, and be planning to imitate one of them to get to the governor. In the Historica, Chondra imitated animals. The house pets could secretly be assassins. Wax glanced at the governor, who looked profoundly disturbed, his hands clasped, eyes staring as if to see 1,000 miles. The implications of it were sinking in. Innate wasn't an idiot, just an egotist, and possibly a crook. The carriage pulled up to the mansion, and Drim climbed out. As Wax followed, the governor took him by the arm.
I will want to see this proof of yours, ruffian.
I'll arrange a meeting tomorrow.
Tonight.
Wax nodded.
If this is true, what do we do? I've read the words of Founding. I know what the immortals were capable of. Ruin. This creature could be anyone. Passphrases won't be enough, not nearly.
They won't. Sir, the thing has access to the metallic arts, too. At any time, she could be anything from a pulser to an archivist. Though she can only carry one at a time without risking loss of control, she can swap the powers out at will.
Great Harmony. How do you stop something like that?
Frankly, I don't know. You should probably already be dead.
Why am I not?
The governor waved back Drim, who had peeked in to check on them.
This creature could have killed me as easily as she did my brother.
She seems to have some kind of agenda, bigger than you. She might not want to bring you down until doing so topples the city government entirely. Sir, you might want to leave Ellendale.
Leave? Have you seen what is going on in the city? Labor strikes, food prices skyrocketing. Too many men from one job out of work, too many from another demanding to be treated better. Rusts, there are practically riots in the streets, man. And the scandal. I can't leave. My career would be over.
Better than your life being over.
Leaving is impossible. It would look like I'm abandoning the people. They'd think the scandal drove me into hiding. I'd be perceived as a coward. No, impossible. I will send Lady Innate to safety, as well as the children. I must stay, and you must deal with this thing, whatever it is. Stop it before it can go any further.
I'll try. Give me a passphrase to authenticate myself. Something memorable, but nonsensical.
Leavening on sand.
Good. Mine for you is bones without soup. You have a safe room?
Yes, in the bottom of the mansion, beneath the sitting room.
Set up in there.
Wax climbed out of the carriage.
And if you lock the door, don't let anyone in until I arrive and can give you the passphrase.
Wax found himself pulling out Vindication. He leveled the gun before he registered what had set him off. A servant hastened out of the governor's mansion. Passing pillars on the front lit stark white like a line of femurs.
My lord governor, we've had a telenote through the wire. Something has happened. You're going to need to prepare a response.
What is it?
The governor climbed from the carriage. The servant hesitated, eyes widening at Wax's gun. She wore a sharp black suit, skirt to the ankles, red scarf at the neck. A steward, or perhaps one of the governor's advisors.
I'm a constable. What is the emergency?
A murder!
Not Lord Harms. Please tell me.
Lord who? It wasn't a nobleman at all, constable.
The woman glanced at Drim, who nodded. Wax could be trusted. She looked back to Wax.
It was Father Vin, the priest!
Marisi stared up at the corpse, which had been nailed to the wall like an old drapery. One spike through each eye. Blood painted the man's cheeks and had soaked into the white ceremonial robes, forming a crimson vest, almost like a terrace V. Blood stained the wall on either side of the corpse as well, smeared there by thrashing arms and fingers. Marisi shivered. The priest had been alive as this happened. Though constables poked and prodded at the large nave of the church, Marisi felt alone, standing before that corpse and its steel eyes. Just her and the body, a disturbingly reverent scene. It reminded her of something out of the Historica, though she couldn't remember what. Captain Aradel stepped up beside her.
I've had word of your sister. We've got her in one of our most secure safe houses.
Thank you, sir.
What do you make of it?
It's ghastly, sir. What exactly happened?
The conventicalists are being very helpful. I'm not sure if they're in shock or if they see our intrusion here as offensive.
He gestured for her to go before him, and they passed Wayne, who sat in one of the pews, chewing gum and looking up at the body. Marisi and Aradel exited the domed nave and entered a small foyer where a row of ashen-faced people sat on some benches. They were conventicalists, those who worked in a survivorist church, aside from the priest. A gray-haired woman sat at their head, wearing the formal dress of a church matron. She wiped her eyes, and several youths huddled against her, eyes down. Constable Reddy stood nearby. The lean man tucked his clipboard under his arm and saluted Aradel. Normally, this wasn't the sort of thing a constable general would be involved in, but Aradel had been a detective for many years.
Will you be handling the interrogation yourself, sir?
No.
Very good, sir.
Reddy pulled his bow tie tight and took out his clipboard. He stepped up to the conventicalists.
Actually, I was thinking we'd let Lieutenant Combs try.
Marcy felt a sharp spike of panic, which she smothered immediately. She wasn't afraid of a simple interrogation, particularly with amiable witnesses. But the way Aradel said it so seriously made her suddenly feel as if it were some type of test. Wonderful. She pushed past Reddy, who had lowered his clipboard and was eyeing her. The assembled group of eight people sat with slumped shoulders. How to best approach them? They'd described to a sketch artist what had happened, but details could separate ruin from preservation. Marcy settled down on the bench between the two of them.
My condolences on your loss. My apologies, too. The constabulary has failed you this day.
It's not your fault. Who could have anticipated? Holy survivor, I knew those Pathians were a miscreant bunch. I always knew it. No rules, no precepts to guide their lives.
Chaos. They want nothing but chaos.
What happened? I've read the report, of course, but... Rusts. I can't imagine.
We were waiting for evening celebration. The mists had put in quite the appearance. Must have been almost 1,000 people in the dome for worship. And then he just sauntered up to the dais, that Pathian mongrel.
Did you recognize him?
Of course I did. It was that Larskpore. We see him at community functions all the time. People feel they have to invite a Pathian priest, as if to not show favoritism, though nobody wants them around.
Little wretch of a man, barely fit his robes. Nothing ornate, really, just a smock. They don't even dress up to worship.
He started talking to the crowd, like he was going to give the Mist Dawn sermon. Only it was vile stuff he spouted.
Such as what?
Blasphemy. But it shouldn't matter. Look here, Constable. Why are you even talking to us? 1,000 people saw him. Why are you treating us like we did something wrong? You should be off arresting that monster.
We have people hunting for him.
Marcy rested her hand on the shoulder of one of the children. The little girl clamped onto her arm.
And I promise you, we'll catch and punish the one who did this. But every detail you can remember will help us put him away.
The matron and the underpriest glanced at each other. But it was one of the others, a lanky alderman in his 20s, who spoke.
Larskpore said that the survivor was a false god, that Kelsier had tried and failed to help humankind, that his death hadn't been about protecting us or ascending, but about stupidity and bravado.
It's what they've always thought, but don't say. Those Pathians, they claim to accept everyone, but if you push, you can see the truth. They mock the survivor.
They want chaos. They hate that so many people look to the survivor. They hate that we have standards. They have no meetings, no churches, no commandments. The path isn't a religion, it's a platitude.
It stunned us, I'll tell you that. I thought at first that Father Bin must have invited Larskpore to speak. Why else would he be so bold as to step up to the pulpit? I was so horrified by what he said that I didn't notice the blood at first.
I did. I thought he was wearing gloves. I stared at those fingers waving, bright red. And then I noticed the drops that he was flicking across the floor in the pulpit as he gestured.
There isn't anything more to say. Larskpore gestured one last time and the back draping fell down. There he was, our blessed father, nailed there in a terrible parody of the survivor's state mark. Poor Father Bin had been hanging the whole time. Might have been still alive, bleeding and dying while we all listened to that blasphemy.
Marcy doubted that. Though the priest had obviously struggled at first, the spikes would have ended that quickly.
Thank you. You've been very helpful.
She carefully pried the little girl's hands from her arm and passed her to the matron. Marcy stood, walking to Aradel and Reddy, who stood on the other side of the room.
What do you think?
About the information or your interrogation techniques?
Either.
That wasn't how I'd have done it. But I suppose that you did put them at ease.
They didn't offer much.
What did you expect? Captain, this had to be the same person who killed Winsting.
Don't jump to conclusions. What would be the motive?
Can you explain this any other way?
Marcy gestured toward the room with the dead priest.
A Pathian? Murdering? Sir, their priests are some of the least aggressive people on the planet. I've seen toddlers more dangerous.
Ready? Go get these conventicalists something to drink. They could use a warm mug right now, I'd suspect.
Sir?
You've been spending so much time at the gun range you've gone deaf? Be about it, Captain. I need to talk to Constable Combs.
Reddy's glare at Marcy could have boiled water, but he moved off to do as ordered.
Sir, I can't help noticing that you're determined to see the rest of the constables hate me.
Nonsense. Just giving the boy a nudge. He's useless when he isn't trying to show off for me. Those weeks when he thought he had the assistant's position sewn up were miserable. He's a better officer when he has somebody to compete with.
Arundel took Marcy by the shoulder and steered her away from the seated conventicalists. A junior corporal had just shown up with blankets and mugs of warm tea. Hopefully, Reddy wouldn't be too put out at having that job stolen from him, too.
I can't fight mist wraiths and spirits in the night. I'm a watchman, not an exorcist.
I understand that, sir.
On their ride over here, she had told him what Waxillium had said about Bleeder. She wasn't about to keep information like that from her superior.
But if the criminal is supernatural, what option do we have?
I don't know, and that frustrates me to no end. I've got a city dry as a pile of autumn leaves, Lieutenant, and it's about to go up in flames. I don't have the manpower to hunt down a fallen immortal. I need to have constables on the streets trying to keep this city from consuming itself.
Sir, what if the two are related?
The two murders?
The murders and the unrest, sir.
Marcy closed her eyes, remembering the chapel with its dome and pews, and tried to imagine it as it had been earlier. Larkspur standing in front and waving his hands, horrified parishioners fleeing and burying the story that the Pathian leader had murdered a survivorist priest.
Bleeder, or whoever is behind this, has distracted the government with a scandal. Now she strikes at one church leader in the guise of another? Sir, whatever her real motives are, she's obviously trying to strain Ellendale. She wants this city to break.
You might be ascribing too much to one person, Lieutenant.
Not just a person. A demigod. Sir, what started the worker strikes?
Hell if I know.
Arundel patted at his pocket and took out his cigar case. He opened it and found only a little folded note. He grimaced and showed it to her. There's a banana in your drawer.
Damn woman will be the death of me. Anyway, I suspect the strikes have been building for a while. Harmony knows I sympathize with the poor fools. Get paid like dirt while the house lords live in mansions and penthouses.
But why now? It's the food, right? Suddenly spiked prices, worry that even when the strikes end, there won't be food to be bought?
That certainly hasn't helped. Those floods are going to be a strain.
A broken dam? Did we investigate that properly?
You think that could have been sabotage?
Could be worth checking.
Could be indeed. I'll see if I can spare some men, but if you're right, what's this creature's endgame?
General mayhem?
Maybe it's different from mist wraiths, but men who do things like this, they do it to prove something. They want to show how clever they are, or they want to stop an injustice. Maybe she just wants to bring someone down. Isn't the governor a Pathian?
I think so.
So this murder tonight could be an attempt to discredit his religion. Kill his brother, expose a scandal, undermine his faith, cause riots during his tenure. Rusts. This could be about making sure that Innate doesn't just die, he gets stomped to the ground.
Sir, I might have proof that the governor is corrupt.
What? What kind of proof?
Nothing definitive. It has to do with his policies, and when he's changed his mind on bills, when he's voted irregularly following visits with certain key individuals. Sir, you said you hired me in part because of my ability to read statistics. I'll show you what I have once it's all arranged, but the story the governor's record tells is of a man who is offering himself up for sale.
Arundel ran a hand through his hair, red, flecked with gray.
Harmony. Keep this quiet, Lieutenant. We'll worry about it another time. Understand?
Yes, sir. And I agree.
But good work.
Arundel jogged over to take crime scene reports. Marcy couldn't help feeling a thrill that he'd listened to what she'd said, even when all she could offer was half explanations. At the same time, however, a disturbing thought struck her. What if Arundel was secretly the Chandra somehow? How much damage could Bleeder do if she had an entire Octon's constables under her thumb? No, Aradel had been around people when the priest was murdered. Rusts. The creature would have Maracy jumping at shadows, wondering if everyone she met was a Chondra. She went to get herself a cup of that tea, hoping it would help her banish the image in her head of poor Father Bin hung from the wall. She wasn't halfway to the table with the flasks before the doors to the foyer opened and Waxillium strode in. He trailed tassels like the curling mists, his powerful stride prompting lesser constables to scuttle out of his way. How was it that he could so fully encapsulate everything the constables should be, but weren't? Noble without being pandering, thoughtful yet proactive, unyielding yet inquisitive. Maracy smiled, then hurried after him. It wasn't until they reached the chapel, with its large glass dome and the dead priest hanging on the far side, that she realized she'd forgotten entirely about getting tea. A headache still thumped inside her skull. Aradel stood inside the nave, accompanied by two young constables.
Lord Ladrian, we'll have a report on the body ready for
I'll
you.
I'll see for myself, Constable. Thank you.
He dropped a bullet casing and rose into the air, soaring over rows of pews beneath the dome to land on the dais. Aradel turned to one of the corporals.
See that his lordship gets whatever he needs. Maybe he can make something of this damn mess, assuming he doesn't just shoot the place up instead.
The young constable nodded, then ran to join Waxillium, who was saying something to Wayne, who had stepped up to join him. Whatever Waxillium said sent the shorter man scuttling out the doors on some errand. The constable general shook his head, a sour grimace on his lips.
Sir, you're upset with Lord Waxillium?
Pay no heed, Lieutenant. His lordship is a great resource to this department.
Sir, that has the sound of a practiced answer to it.
Good, because it took me a long time to learn to say it without cursing.
Could I have the non-practiced version?
Let's just say that it must be damn nice, Lieutenant, to have other people to clean up your messes for you.
Aradel nodded to her, then stalked from the room. Rust. Was that how Aradel saw Waxillium? A rogue nobleman accustomed to getting what he wanted? Blunt in ways that Aradel could never be? The constable general wasn't a nobleman, and had to worry about funding, politics, the future of his men. Waxillium could just butt in and do what he liked, shooting and letting his status, both as an allomancer and a house lord, get him out of it. That perspective was eye-opening. Waxillium was a trouble. A worthwhile trouble, as he did get things done, but almost as bad as the problems he solved. But for that brief moment, he seemed less an ally and more a storm that you had to prepare for and clean up after. Disturbed, she walked up through the room to join him beside the body.
Those spikes give off strong lines.
Waxillium pointed at Father Bin's ruined face.
To my allomantic senses, I mean. From what I've read, I think that means they're not hemallergic spikes. Those are supposed to be tough to see and push on, like metal mines.
What would spiking him accomplish?
No idea. Still, when you get that body down, send me a sample of metal from each spike. I want to run some tests on their composition.
All right.
We should have seen it. She's trying to drive a wedge between the Pathians and the Survivorists.
The Governor is Pathian. We think Bleeder is trying to get at him.
You're right, but that's not her true goal. She wants to overthrow the city. Perhaps the Governor's murder will be the capstone. But what does this have to do with me?
Everything doesn't have to be about you, you know.
Not everything. Just this.
Annoyingly, he was probably right. Why else would Bleeder be parading around the city wearing the body of the man who had killed Waxillium's wife? Waxillium left the corpse, pushing out of the building through the rear exit. There, a narrow alleyway led out to the street. Maracy followed, joining Waxillium in the darkness and mists.
What are you doing?
You don't plan a dramatic murder like this one without preparing an escape route. From the discarded handkerchiefs and handbags left behind, I'd guess the room was full when she revealed the body. The worshippers ran out the main doors, and the murderer would have expected this. She would have come out the back, getting away while everyone was either fleeing or stunned.
Okay.
Narrow alley.
Waxillium knelt to inspect the wall.
Look at this.
Maracy squinted. The bricks along the wall here had been scraped, leaving behind something that had rubbed off on them.
Looks metallic. Silvery.
Paint, I'd guess. Where it came from is a small question, unfortunately, compared to the larger ones. Why would she kill this priest in the first place? She warned me she was going to. I thought she meant your father, not Father Bin.
Waxillium, we need more information about what this creature can do and what its motives might be.
Agreed.
Waxillium rose and stared down the alleyway.
I'd like to ask God a few hard questions.
I doubt he's going to make himself available, however, so we'll have to settle for somebody else.
Who?
I had some help tonight from an unexpected source. I have a feeling that an interview with her will be illuminating. Want to come?
Of course I do. Why wouldn't I?
Well, I'm worried that interacting with her might prove theologically difficult.
Wayne didn't consider himself to be a particularly religious man. He figured that Harmony didn't pay much attention to fellows like him, for the same reason a master painter didn't often wonder what his mom had done with the pictures he'd given her as a toddler. That said, Wayne did like to visit the Temple of the Common Man now and then. It made him feel better and forget his problems for a spell. So he knew the place when Wax sent him on ahead to check it over. The temple huddled on the corner of an intersection, a stately old building, squat and stubborn. Newer tenements perched on either side, some 6 stories tall. But the temple had an air of an old gaffer in his chair who hadn't the inclination to look higher than a fellow's knees. As Wayne had expected, the door was open and friendly, still spilling out light, though it was starting to get late. He strolled down the lane and nodded to the temple guard, who wore a cap and overalls for his uniform and bore a ceremonial stick that seemed to have bits of hair sticking out of the end, likely from clubbing men upside the head for being too rowdy. Wayne tipped his hat to the man.
Hello, Blue. How watery's the beer today?
Don't make trouble at the pub tonight, Wayne. My temper is really short.
Temper? Well, that's a funny name for it, mate, but if the ladies like you giving silly names to your body parts, I ain't gonna say nothing.
Ritual introductions finished, Wayne stepped into the temple proper. Inside, men and women bowed at their places, heads drooping as they considered the deep complexity of the Cosmere. Their prayers were made in mumbled exchanges to friends and their incense in the burning of pipes. A picture of old Ladrian himself hung over the altar, a man with a ripe paunch and a cup thrust forward as if to demand attention. Wayne stood in the doorway, head bowed in respect, and dabbed his fingers into a trail of beer dripping from a nearby table, then anointed himself on the forehead and navel, the mark of the spear. The scent marked him as a pilgrim upon this holy ground, and he passed among the penitents seeking forgiveness on his way to the altar. The air of the place was odd tonight, solemn. Yes, the temple was a place of contemplation, but it should also be a place of joy. Where were the hymns, sung in a holy slur? Where was the laughter, the joyful noise of celebration?
Not good.
He settled onto one of the pews, in this case a rough circular table with scriptures carved into it, like, "Mick is a total git," and "The sausages is rubbish." He'd always liked that one. It brought up real theological implications, it did. If the food they ate was trash, were they ultimately trash? Were they all nothing in the end? Or should one instead see even trash as something to be elevated, as it had been created by the God beyond, like everything else? Wayne settled back in his seat and drew a few looks from nearby tables. As a lovely young conventicalist in a plunging top passed by carrying mugs, he took her arm.
I'll have some whiskey.
The maid shook her head and continued on her way. Those nearby ignored him. Wayne closed his eyes and listened to their prayers.
They're just gonna let us starve. You heard the governor, Wren. All he cares about is his rusting reputation.
We're supposed to have the good life. Harmony made this land for us all, but do we get to enjoy it? No. Its riches only mean that the fine folk get more outfits and big houses.
Something needs to change in this city. I ain't out of work like those fellas at the steel mill, but Harmony...
16-hour shifts. I leave before my little girl gets up, and she's in bed before I get back. See her once a week, I do.
We work and die so we can give it all up to the same people. They own the building we live in. Ain't that the scam? Work for them all day, then give it all back at night for the privilege of being able to survive another day to keep working.
Weighty prayers, those were. Wayne kicked back away from his table and walked to the altar at the front of the room, with its bottles on the rack behind shining in the light. Gas lights. Real traditional, this temple was. He settled down at the altar between a fellow with suspenders and another with arms so hairy he had to have some bear in him. Grandfather, at least. Wayne nodded to the priest behind the altar.
Whiskey.
The man gave him a cup of water with a lemon in it instead. Wayne settled back, sipping his water. The men here at the altar, they didn't complain. They just stared, holding their cups. Wayne nodded. Those were silent prayers, the kind that you could read in their eyes. He reached out and plucked the cup from the next man's hands. Plain rum. What fun was that? He reached over to Bear Fur and plucked his drink from his fingers as well. Both men turned toward him as he downed the rest of his water, then mixed their drinks together in his cup. He gave it a squeeze of his lemon and a pinch of sugar from behind the altar, then added some ice, placed a coaster on top, and shook like his life depended on it. Which it might, since the fellow with rugs on his arms had just stood up and cracked his knuckles. Before he could start pounding, Wayne spun a cup toward each man and settled back in thought. Hesitant, the men reached out and tried their drinks. Suspenders tried his first.
Wow! What did you do?
Wayne tapped the table with one finger as Harry Arms tried his drink and nodded appreciatively. Living among the fancy folk had taught Wayne a few things. Fancy folk couldn't ever do anything the ordinary way. Sometimes he thought they acted strange just so they wouldn't be like regular folk. But they did know how to get drunk. He'd give them that. The priest came over to investigate the disturbance, but both men just wanted more of what Wayne had made. The priest listened to them try to explain it and then nodded. Looked like he'd worked some fancy parties or had some rich folk come in here. Wayne slipped something onto the altar. A couple of bullet casings.
What's this? Is this aluminum?
Wayne stood up and gathered a few things from behind the altar, then piled them in the priest's arms. He had ice, fortunately, from a delivery earlier. That was getting cheaper and cheaper these days, with shipments down from the mountains. The fellow also had a nice collection of spirits and some fixings, enough for Wayne to make do. Wayne pointed for the men to follow him, then began working his way through the room. He stopped at each table, taking their drinks and reworking them. Those with beer got juice or soda water, mixed carefully and transformed. He always left them with something like what they'd started with, but new, fresh. He added ginger to some, worked real nice with lemon, and bitters to others. He tried to use something from every table and only got cussed at a couple of times. Before too long, he had the temple feeling far more companionable. In fact, he'd drawn something of a crowd. He settled down at a table in front of a tall, pretty woman with large eyes and long fingers. The drink he made for her wasn't actually anything special. Gin and lime with some soda water and a hint of sugar. But the secret ingredient, well, that was something special. A pouch of blue powder he'd found at the party earlier that night. He'd traded some sand for it. He mixed the powder into the drink with a hidden twist of the fingers, shaking, before finally adding the lime. As he slid the cup in front of the woman, the drink's blue liquid swirled and moved, then blushed to a deep violet, the color moving through it like growing mists. The woman smiled at him. He gave her a grin back. He was taken, yes, but he needed to keep practicing his flirtin', or Renette was likely to start ignoring him. And then the skin of the woman's cheeks shifted to blue, then violet, just like the drink had. Wayne jumped back from the table as her skin returned to normal. She took the drink with a sly smile.
Nice, but I usually like something with more kick to it.
The others in the temple were retreating to their pews. They'd enjoyed the show, but were looking forward to enjoying their liquor even more. They didn't seem to have noticed what the woman's skin had done. Perhaps Wayne had been mistaken. He hesitantly took the seat back and looked at the woman, whose eyes, clear as daylight, shifted from blue to violet, then once again to blue.
Well, hang me. You're that immortal, ain't you?
Sure am.
She held out her hand for him to shake.
Name's Milan. Wexilium told me to say all yellow pants to prove it. You did well here tonight. When I first arrived, I felt like the place was going to burst from all the anger. You might have stopped a riot.
It's just one pub.
Wayne shook her hand, then settled back in his chair.
One out of hundreds. If a riot is brewing, I can't stop it with some girly drinks.
True, I suppose.
What I need to do is get the whole city drunk.
Or, you know, advocate workers' rights to bring down working hours, improve conditions, and meet a base minimum of pay.
Yeah, that too.
But if I could get everybody drunk, think how much happier this city would be.
So long as you get me drunk first, I'd be fine with it.
Milan held out her cup to him.
Top a lady off, will you?
No, this ain't right. You're some kind of demigod or something. Shouldn't you be moralizing at me?
Lo, behold.
She wiggled her cup.
Bring an offering to your deity in the form of one blue sunset extra gin, and ye shall be blessed.
I think I can do that. Bloody hell, maybe I am religious after all.
The immortal demigod took a throaty slurp of her beer, then grinned like a 4-year-old who had been paid in cookies to rat out her sister. Wax studied her as she looked Wayne in the eyes. Beside Wax, Wayne nodded in appreciation, looking quite impressed. He then downed his own beer.
How do you do that?
Years of training and practice.
I've been alive for well over half a millennium. I am certain I have more practice than you.
You don't have the will, though. You gotta want it.
Wayne downed the rest of his mug. Marcy, who sat next to Wax in their booth at the pub, looked horrified by the exchange. Wax had allowed her to drive them here, if only so he could rebind his wound and check it over. The painkillers were doing their job, though. He could barely feel the hit. After the short ride, he and Marcy had walked in on these two in the middle of their belching contest. Wax wasn't certain if it was a contest, or more a matter of mutual appreciation, like two virtuosos playing their favorite songs. Melan finished her beer, then dramatically held up her hand. The palm split, forming lips.
Cheating?
Just using what Father gave me. Don't tell me you wouldn't belch out of other body parts if you could.
Well, now that you mention it, I can make a real interesting sound with...
And not to defer a conversation about which parts of Wayne's body can and can't make noise, but I have to admit that you aren't what I expected, Your Grace.
Bloody hell, please don't call me that.
You're a servant of Harmony.
I'm from one of the later generations. In Chondra terms, I'm basically still a kid.
You lived through the Katasandra. You knew the originators.
I spent the Katasandra underground. I was an adolescent and didn't know the land when it was covered in ash. You really don't need to be intimidated by me.
You're over 600 years old.
So is Dirt. Look, I'm just here to help. If you want someone to fawn over, I'll send Vendel or one of the really ancient ones to you. They like it. I just want to see Pa'alm stopped, then helped.
Wax leaned forward on the table. He could sense in the way Melan smiled at people passing by that she liked people. She liked being here among them. She wasn't aloof, as he'd expected, or withdrawn. Not even that alien, despite the fact that she'd just made a mouth in her hand.
You're the one who brought me my earring, all those years ago.
I was wearing the same body, but I'm still surprised you remember.
And whose body is it? Where did you get those bones?
I made them.
Melan raised her chin. Her face went transparent suddenly, revealing the skull underneath. One made of carved crystal of a vivid emerald color.
I prefer true bodies, though if I need to, I can take another form. I'll warn you, as far as Chondra go, I'm only so-so at impersonation.
And this one we're hunting?
Wayne had started building a house-like tower using the thin wooden coasters strewn around the tavern table, placing them on their ends.
Pa'alm?
Melan turned her face back to normal.
She was one of our best. Of all the Chondra I know, only Tensun is better at it than she is.
But she'll be erratic. She's gone mad. That should help us spot her, even in disguise, right?
Maybe.
Melan took a few of the coasters and started her own tower.
Pa'alm is good. And imitation. Well, it's kind of ingrained in us, particularly the older Chondra who worked back in the days of the Final Empire. Some of them don't feel like they have personalities of their own. They don't know how to live unless they're being someone else.
You seem to find the idea disturbing.
I'm a youngster. Never really had to serve the Lord Ruler. I've always served Harmony, who seems like a generally nice fellow.
An odd way to refer to God. Wax glanced at Marcy, who cocked an eyebrow at him and shrugged. Wax and the others had settled into a secluded booth at the side. The warm gas lighting was somehow friendlier, more alive than the electric lights back at his mansion.
All right, let's talk about what Bleeder can do, and about how to kill her.
You don't need to kill her.
Melan got her tower to a second story. She glanced at Wayne, who already had his up to 3 levels.
Just remove her remaining spike, which will basically immobilize her. She's confused. We can deal with her once we have her in custody.
Confused? She killed a priest by nailing him through the eyes.
She only has one spike. She's not thinking straight.
Yes, but she pulled the other spike out herself, right?
We think so. We're weaker than other hemallergic creatures. Only two spikes and we can be taken. So she removed one.
She wanted freedom to kill. She's not confused, Milan. She's destructive and possibly psychotic. Tell me how to kill her.
Acid works, but it's horribly inefficient. If you crush her skeleton, she'll have a hard time moving, so maybe use that. Gunshots will be useless, as will most forms of physical damage. The spike. It's the key. Pull it out and she'll revert to her primal state. It's the best way.
Her primal state? A mist wraith?
Milan nodded.
If I can get the spike out, chances are that I've already immobilized her. If she's tied up, what good will it do to remove the spike?
Waxillium, do you realize what you're dealing with? Pa'am was trained by the ancients and served the Lord Ruler himself. She quashed rebellions and overthrew kingdoms in his service, and she is intimately familiar with the intricacies of hemallergy. By your own account, she's learned to use spikes to grant herself allomancy and ferrochemy, something we thought impossible. If you have her captured, that is a state she's not likely to remain in for long. Remove that spike.
Right. Will do.
Rusts, I thought you didn't want us to be intimidated by you.
Me? I'm harmless. I'm far less crazy than Pa'alm.
Great.
Wax glanced at Wayne.
You look concerned.
Me?
Wayne placed a fourth level onto his tower.
Sorry. Trying to think of how to get everyone in the city drunk.
I'm not going to ask.
Wax grabbed a few of the coasters as a barmaid dropped more on the table, having noticed that they were playing with them. He started building a tower of his own.
So we get the spike out. How?
Easiest way is to call me. I can get it out. But if I'm not there, don't wait on me. Break her bones, start pulling them out, and eventually you'll find the spike. It will take a strong stomach.
Is there a way to spot a chondra? Wound patterns? Blood samples?
Milan dug into her pocket.
Once we've shifted shapes, we lock into that body and are that person. We'll bleed. And if you take off a finger, our prints will remain that of the person we're imitating. Even another chondra will have trouble spotting a duplicate. Haven't you read the Historica?
Several times. But the chondra sections are kind of dull.
I feel like I should be offended by that.
Then you aren't drunk enough.
Wayne was onto a fifth level now. Wax shook his head and concentrated on getting his second level built.
Anyway, locating other chondra was a problem in the past, so we did something about it, just in case. The more scientifically minded among us developed this.
She slid something onto the table. A pair of needles, about as long as a man's palm is wide, attached to metal syringes. Wax held one up.
Inject that into a chondra and the liquid inside will make her shape droop for a bit. The skin briefly goes clear, reveals who she really is.
Nifty.
One problem, though. If you stick it into someone who isn't a chondra, it will kill them.
Inconvenient?
Yeah, we're working on that part. This is a last resort, obviously, but it will immobilize her briefly. If you want to find Pa'alm before using it, you can try to catch her in a lie. She won't have the actual memories of the person she's imitating. Conversely, if you see someone who isn't metalborn use a power, that outs her too.
I've got a feeling that if she's using her powers right in front of me, I'm dead anyway.
Wax took both syringes and tucked them into the pouch on his gun belt. Marisi scribbled on a notepad, transcribing the conversation. He'd have to ask her for a copy. Drink refills arrived, and no payment was requested. What had Wayne done here before Wax arrived? He was afraid to ask.
What help is this?
A weapon he could use only when he was already 100% certain who the imposter was? It felt like so little. Bleeder could be anyone. Bleeder could manifest any of the powers. Bleeder was ancient, brilliant, and crafty.
She has a plan. She's not simply crazy, Milan. There is more to this.
You're still determined to kill her?
If I have to. Why are you so hesitant? I'd think that the Chondra would be determined more than anyone to see this problem dealt with.
She's not a problem. She's a person. Yes, I want to see her stopped. She needs to be stopped, but...
Milan settled back, then knocked over her small tower of coasters with a flick of the finger.
There's so few of us left. Hell, there weren't ever more than 500 or 600 of us, and we lost a lot in the days before the final ascension. Imagine if your entire race consisted of 300 people, Lawman. Maybe you'd be a little more hesitant to see one of them slagged.
A person's species shouldn't matter. I don't care if there are 300 of you left or just three. When one of you starts nailing people to walls in my city, I'm going
to... Wax.
Wayne balanced his sixth story of beer mat coasters.
Check your pulse, mate.
Sorry.
What was that? Pulse?
Sometimes Wax forgets he's a person and starts thinking he's a rock instead.
It's Wayne speak.
Wax grabbed some coasters and started another tower.
For times when he thinks I should be a little more empathetic.
You can be pretty single-minded, mate.
Says the man who once collected 80 different kinds of beer bottles.
Yeah, did that mostly to annoy you, I did.
You're kidding.
Started to hate all those rust and bottles, but each morning you'd curse when you tripped over a new box of them, and it was just so melodious.
You know, you two aren't anything like I was led to believe.
Tell me about it.
For one thing, I had no idea that Kid Wayne was so talented with beer mat sculptures.
He cheated. He stuck some of the coasters on his lower level together with that gum stuff he's been chewing.
Marcy and Milan turned to Wayne, who grinned. He picked up his sculpture, knocking down the top levels, but revealing that the bottom three had indeed been stuck together.
Wayne, are you that concerned with impressing us?
It wasn't about impressing anyone. The contest wasn't about how high the towers got. It was about if I'd spot what he did. He always cheats somehow. Back to the matter at hand, Milan. Your rogue Chandra friend is planning something. If her plot gains momentum, it will roll over us and crush this city.
I agree. So what do?
We outthink her. I need to know her motive. Why is she doing this? What drove her to pull out her spike in the first place?
I wish I knew. We've been trying to figure out the same thing.
Tell me about her, then. What is she like? What are her passions?
Pa'alm was the ultimate blank slate. Old-style Chandra. Like I said, she spent so much time out on missions, she barely had a personality of her own. She had real trouble with that at the dawn of a new world. Some of the older generations, they liked to spend time in the homeland, only left for a mission when forced to, not Pa'alm. She was the Father's Own, the Chandra reserved specifically to do missions for the Lord Ruler. She might know things from him, things the rest of us weren't told. I think he may have even had her imitate Inquisitors at times, act as a mole among them. Anyway, she wouldn't have been able to impersonate an Inquisitor without a good grasp of Alamancy and Ferrochemy, so maybe that's where she got the knowledge. She was loyal to the Lord Ruler, and then when he was gone, she became loyal to Harmony, fanatical about it, insisted on being given mission after mission, and never spent time with the rest of us, kept to herself. She was almost always in character, well, until...
Murderous rampage. It's always the quiet ones. Well, and the psychopathic ones, that too.
So what does that tell me?
Wax left his little tower at three stories.
How would I approach this if it were any other criminal?
Milan leaned back for a moment, as if lost in thought, then flipped a coaster at Wax's tower to knock it down.
Huh.
What?
I was just curious to see if you were cheating, too.
Wax never cheats.
That's incorrect. I cheat infrequently. That way nobody's expecting it.
Wax stood up.
Can you think of a reason Bleeder would target the governor in particular?
Milan shook her head.
Do any of the other Chandra know her better than you do?
Maybe one of the older ones. I can see if I can get one of them to come talk to you.
Good. But first, I want you three watching the governor.
I've got to report into the precinct offices first. I want to follow up on something there.
Fine. Wayne, you head to the governor's mansion first.
He ditched me last time.
He won't again. I've persuaded him to listen, though we'll need him to meet Milan soon.
Sure. All right. Wasn't like I was planning to, you know, sleep tonight or anything.
Sleep might be in short supply going forward.
You want me to go with him, Dawnshot?
Depends. Marcy, would you like some backup?
Yes, please.
Watcher, and maybe give Aridel a glimpse of your nature. It's probably time to inform him what we're up against.
Already done, though I'm sure he'd like proof.
Be quick about your errand and get to the governor. I want more than one set of eyes on him. And before we split, I want each pair of us to exchange codes, individual and unknown to the others, so we each have a way to authenticate ourselves to one another. I've done the same with the governor and his top staff.
Harmony, this is gonna be a nightmare.
Watching the governor isn't going to be enough, Wax.
Marcy stood up from the table.
You yourself said it. Too reactive. So what else are we going to do?
I'll come up with something.
The others stood, and Wax towed Wayne by the arm to check to see that they were square with the pub manager. Surprisingly, Wayne had indeed paid for everything he should have. On their way toward the door, Wax explained to his friend the little idea he had for protecting the governor. They stepped into the entryway of the pub, where Melan was waiting while Marisie fired up her beast of a motor car. Wayne hiked off to catch a carriage to take him to the governor's mansion, and Wax took Melan by the arm.
I hate this, not being able to trust people I should always be able to, second-guessing myself.
Yeah, but you'll handle it. There's a reason he came to you for this.
Melan stepped in closer. Rusts, she was attractive. But then it would be odd if she weren't, all things considered.
You and I aren't the only ones hunting Pa'am, Lawman. Every Chandra in the city is searching for her. Thing is, I don't think many of my brothers and sisters will be of use. They're timid about hurting others, particularly after what Tensun was forced to do during the Remark duplicity. And beyond that, they can be an inconsistent group.
They're God's servants.
Yes, and they've had centuries upon centuries to refine their eccentricities. Getting older does not tend to make you more normal. Let me tell you, we don't think like killers. We've been too closely in contact with Harmony. What Pa'am is doing, it baffles us. It goes against everything we've believed and lived for centuries. I don't think we'll be able to find her, not in time. But you can.
Because I think like a killer.
I didn't...
It's all right.
Wax released her arm.
I am what I am.
He took his mist coat from the peg by the door and shrugged it on.
Thanks, by the way.
For?
He tapped his ear and the earring he wore in it.
This.
I was just the delivery girl.
Doesn't matter. It was what I needed, when I needed it. I'll meet you all at the governor's mansion.
If you want to know a man, dig in his fire pit. The phrase was from the roughs, maybe Kolos in origin. Basically, it meant that you could judge a lot about a man's life by what he threw away, or by what he was willing to burn in order to stay warm. Wax moved through the mists on alimentic jumps. 11 was not late these days, particularly not in the heart of the city, but it should have marked a time when most men and women had begun to seek their beds. Labor started early in the morning. Only a sizable portion of the laborers in the city didn't have a job to get up for right now. That was reflected in the busy streets and busier pubs, not to mention the soothing parlors he passed, still open well into the night. Those were places where the downhearted could seek a different kind of relief, in the form of an allomancer who, for a small fee, would wipe away their emotions for a time and leave them numb. Rioting parlors were a different beast. There, you could choose the emotion you wanted and have it stoked within you. Those might be even more popular, judging by the line he saw outside one. He eventually reached the location he'd set out to find. Ashweather Carriage and Coach, a large open yard at the northern edge of the Octant, where a fleet of carriages of various styles was stored. Rich-looking landaus with retractable tops, conventional buggies with less lavish upholstery and wood to attract a modest clientele. A few Surrey-style with frilled tops. By far the most common in the carriage park was the standard road coach, the four-wheeled vehicle with a completely enclosed passenger compartment and room at the top front for a driver. They called them Barringtons in the city, after Lord Barrington, and though the paint jobs could vary wildly, the style was pretty much standardized. Wax's own coaches were Barringtons. He counted 7 in a line here, all lit by electric lamps atop towering stanchions high enough to light the whole yard and adjacent large, low buildings. Those were stables, of course, as his nose confirmed. All of the Ashweather Company's carriages were painted a shiny black, common for vehicles used as cabs in the city, and they had a round shield on the side proclaiming the Set family heritage. A shield painted silver, the color that had scraped onto the bricks in the alleyway outside the church. Bleeder had likely fled in a coach just like one of these, one that had been told to wait while Bleeder killed the priest. Wax inspected each vehicle in turn, running his fingers over the silver-painted shields on the sides. No scrapes.
Can I help you?
Steel sight indicated a person walking up the row of vehicles. No weapon held, but metal buttons on his coat, a ring on each hand, some change in the pocket, and a watch in his waistcoat. A few pins in the collar of his shirt, very small lines, gave Wax an idea of how tall the man was. Wax turned toward the voice. The man turned out to be a pudgy fellow in a distinctive formal suit with long tails. Wax had known more than a few Sets in his time, He'd never gotten along with any of them. Lean or fat, rich or scrawny, they all got the same calculating look on their faces as they tried to estimate how much money Wax would be willing to part with. This set's eyes flicked toward Wax's suit, which was rumpled, swum in, and missing the cravat. With the duster on, he likely didn't look very distinguished, and the man's expression hardened. Then he saw the tassels on the duster.
My lord, would you like to hire a coach for the evening?
You know me?
Waxillium Ladrian, I believe.
Good.
Wax dug into his pocket and removed a small steel sheet engraved on one side. His credentials, proof that he was a constable.
I'm on constabulary business. How many of these coaches do you have?
23.
Lots of coaches still in service for the night, considering the hour.
We work as long as people are out, Constable. And tonight, people are out.
I need a list of the drivers who are still working, their routes, and any prearranged clients they picked up today.
Of course.
Set seemed more relaxed as he led Wax toward a small building in the center of the carriage yard. Inside the building, Set fetched some records from a desk.
Too eager.
The man hurried over and offered them. Whenever someone worked with the authorities too easily, it made Wax's eye twitch. So he took his time browsing through the list Set proffered and kept an eye on the man as he did so.
What percentage of your pickups are impromptu, and what percentage are arranged ahead of time?
Half and half for the black coaches. The open carriages are more spur of the moment.
Set had a good game face, but something was bothering him. What was he hiding?
You think everyone is hiding something?
Wax flipped through the pages.
Stay on the task at hand.
Wax dug into the list, hoping Bleeder had decided to hire a coach for a pickup to be certain she had her escape planned, rather than just grabbing a cab on the street. Finding the one who had driven her would be useful either way. He looked over the records for the drivers still out for the night. Each had a few prearranged pickups over the course of the day, but only three had been scheduled around the time of the murder. And two of those were repeat customers with a long list of pickups in the past. That left one. A person to be picked up in the fourth octant and to be driven at liberty, meaning they were to be driven as long as the client wished. Shanwan was the name listed, a terrace name. The word meant secret.
I need to find this driver.
Wax held up the list and pointed.
Coach 16, that's Chapau's. No telling when he'll be back. You probably don't want to wait. I can send you a message when he returns.
Maybe.
Suddenly, a young woman in trousers and suspenders burst in.
Boss, late night play getting out on bond weather. They're going to want rides.
We sent coaches there already.
Not enough. Boss, there are lots of men on the streets. Common men, the type that will make the rich folks nervous. Playgoers will want carriages.
Wake Joan and Forgeron. Send them and anyone else you can rouse. Anything more?
We could have more wheels out for certain, particularly near the pubs.
Coin shot.
Wax guessed, noticing the bag of metal bits, probably pieces of scrap, the young woman carried.
You've been using Allomancer runners to scout for busy areas to send drivers.
Is that surprising?
It's expensive.
You have to spend money to make money, Constable. And as you can see, I'm having a very busy night. Perhaps you could lead me to it, if I promise
to... Coinshot, you see coach number 16 out there? I assume your boss has you checking in on the drivers, making sure they're doing their jobs?
How?
You don't hire an allomancer just for traffic reports. Coach 16?
She glanced at Set, who nodded. So, whatever Set was hiding, it probably didn't have to do with this driver. In fact, it probably didn't have anything to do with Bleeder. Just your average run-of-the-mill lawbreaking.
At least one allomancer on staff.
I didn't see 16 on the streets.
The young allomancer turned to Wax.
But that's because Chapau is at a soothing parlor on Deacon Street. His coach is around the corner.
At a soothing parlor? He's on the clock!
I know. I thought you'd want to hear.
Yes. And what of the rioter you have on staff? Are they there too?
Nah, he's on...
Using emotional allomancy to drum up customers. Riot passing people, making them feel tired or urgent. And more willing to take the coach, conveniently parked right across the street.
You don't have any proof? I'll be speaking with my attorney. I'll have you know that my people are off limits for interrogation without a judicial order.
Take it up with the Constable General. I'm sure you'll be hearing from him soon. For now, I need a description of this carriage driver of yours. along with the names of any pets he owns.